I hope you all had a pleasant Hanukkah. You remember back at the beginning of Hanukkah, when the United States still had an unimpeached president and Israel still had a government a week ago, and bombs were raining down upon Iraq. You remember all of that?
Try not to.
Okay. And Shachar was an unknown, and he will probably be an unknown in 2 months from now. I tell you the truth, I am so confused. I took a major step last night to restore my sanity. I went out to Hipponetto, and I bought a little box of Vysotsky's plain tea. The same stuff they were making in 1849. No herbal stuff, no decaffeinated, none of the nonsense that confuses life, makes it so complex, and I'll tell you, I enjoy a glazel a tea, like my father, Olav HaShalom, and my Zedor. And I'm telling you, it's good. I tell you, go back to the simpler times in life. Go back to the simpler times of life. And you'll see it's a significant step backward for mankind, and I think that that's exactly what we have to do. I am so confused. I can't remember now why the government is falling. I don't know, from one day to the next, from 1 hour to the next, I lost touch with reality. And this morning after breakfast with my glazel of Vysotsky tea, I'm telling you, I felt a sense of calm. We're going into an extremely, extremely difficult and rocky period of time. We have to be even last night I was thinking maybe the Rebbe Yishon wants that there should be a period of internal strife and struggle so that we can't make any further withdrawals from the territory of Eretz. I don't know what it is, I'll tell you. I've stopped second guessing the Rebbe Yishon. I'm certain that he has a plan. I don't know what the plan is. We just have to maintain our sanity as we go through an extremely, extremely difficult time. And we're talking about, it's unbelievable. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is mashpil af meromein. Or he is meromein and then mashpil. I think back a week ago Sunday, or no, a week ago Tuesday, Netanyahu and Binyamin and Sarah and Hillary and what's his name?
Bill.
William Jefferson were walking across Masada, I understand. The whole world was watching Masada, the two great leaders. So one of them is the worst embarrassment on the face of this earth, the great shame of, it's unbelievable, and we will talk about it. Torah has something to say about it too. And the other, I don't know what's going to be. Coming here this morning, there's even a crack in Machne Yehuda. It's not 100% of Machne Yehuda behind Bibi. There's even one Yarkon in Machne Yehuda who has already spoken out on behalf of Shachar. And there may be somebody selling pickles who is going to be with Barak, but we'll just have to wait and see what's going to be. Everybody's hat is going to be in the race, and we're going to be confused. So let's learn Torah, because Torah has a great deal to say about it. I'll tell you, I was thrilled, I think it was last Friday, in one day I got three calls. Rabbi called, you don't have a tape on Parshat Miketz. Three people in one day, it's a record. First set that came out of the Galatians doesn't have any Miketz. There is a new set coming out that does have any Miketz. And this is going to be really a Vayeshev Miketz, Vayikash Shev, but three people were upset that there was no
70 cakes, so we're going to make 80 cakes. Parashat Vayigash, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Vayom et pi Adoni, yitaber no avdecho tovar v'ozne Adoni, vayichar avcho be'avdecho ki chamocho kaparo. The story as it is at this particular point, of course, is that the brothers have come down to Egypt for a second time in order to purchase grain. And on their way out, the great frame-up of all time, Yosef makes certain that his cup is in the baggage of Binyamin. He sends his men after them. They find it in the baggage of Binyamin. They're all brought back. And now they are faced, they're faced with a terrible, terrible crisis. Their father didn't want them to take Binyamin because he was frightened. Who knows what might happen to Binyamin? And here Binyamin, the Ben Zekunim, the youngest, is now being held as a thief. And in ancient society, a thief, who knows what they'll do with a thief? Either they can put him to death or they will enslave him for the rest of his life. And Sofna Panech has already softened, and at the end of Parashat Miketz, said, Cholilo le'asot zot, they're all ready to stay as slaves in his place. He says, for fen that I do something like this, the person in whose hand the cup is found, who he will be a slave to me. You go up in peace to your father. What a peace they're going to go up to their father without Binyamin. Sedra begins with Vayigash Elov Yehuda. Yehuda is the one who now draws close to speak to him. And of course we will see in a few moments the Medrash wonders what's the meaning of Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Remember, they're all standing there and he's talking to all of them. All the brothers are in the presence of Yosef and he's speaking to them. All that it should have said is Vayomer Elav Yehuda. Yehuda said to him, there's conversation going back and forth. They had said, we will all stay as slaves, let him go home. Yosef says, no, you go home and he will stay. The Vayigash strikes a jarring note over here. You'll take a look on your sheets, number one, Medrash. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda drew close to him. And obviously what's troubling the Medrash is the word Vayigash. All it had to say was Vayomer Yehuda. The Vayigash Elav strikes this note that leaves us in doubt as to what's happening here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Hakosha Luchama. The word Lakeshet, to draw close, has many meanings. One of the meanings is to wage war. Kmo da'amar, as it says, by Yigash Yoav v'ha'am asher ito la'mulchama. Yoav and the people who were with him drew close to wage war. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Rabbi Nechemya says precisely the opposite, Hagasha. The word Hagasha is also used with pius when you want to appease, when you want to make peace. Kmo da'amar, as it says, by Yikshu b'nei Yehuda and Yehoshua lefaisol. B'nei Yehuda came to Yehoshua in order to appease him. For Rabbanan Amri, and the rabbi said that we find the word Hagasha litfila, by Yigash Eliyahu. Eliyahu drew close to God in order to pray. Rabbi Loza explained that what's happening over here is im l'milchama aniba, im l'pius aniba, v'im l'tfila aniba. The fourth opinion really is that Yehuda may have all of them in mind. He may be putting his cards out on the table. If you want to fight, we will fight. If you want to make peace, we will make peace. Otherwise, he's going to pray.
the sum total of really what's happening over here is, since in the words of Yehuda, it's an unusual speech of 17 psukim, the longest speech in Torah, 17 psukim. And in this speech, you can read so much into it. There are all sorts of hidden meanings. He may be alluding to all sorts of things that are not clear, but in this communication, it can be interpreted and understood in so many ways. And the fact is that a speech of this sort, he's making a plea that it is most probably the most important plea that he has made in his whole life. He sees everything crumbling before him. He has guaranteed the life of Binyamin. He has guaranteed his safety. How is he going to come home without Binyamin? He has to make every word count. And it's possible that every word is going to count more than once, because it may have in it all of these ingredients. And there are psukim here that can be read in all ways. It can be as though he's pleading. It could be threatening. There's an implied threat. It could also mean an attack. I think he's going to be telling him at a number of points, without saying it, you know, very, very nicely, "You're a liar. You can't be trusted. Ata bilti amin. You simply are untrustworthy." Now, that's not really the way to win kings and influence viceroys. So therefore, it has to be said in such a way that it could very well be understood as saying, you know, maybe we didn't understand each other clearly. I understood it this way, and maybe you understood it in another way. But this is the most important speech that Yehuda is going to make. And therefore, in the word Vayigash, or in the words Vayigash Elav, Chazal see many, many possibilities, because the word is unnecessary. And therefore, if we're in the middle of a conversation, and I continue the conversation, you never say Vayigash. What do you mean? We're in the middle of talking. What's the Vayigash say? What do you mean he's drawing? He's there. So we've had four opinions so far. Rabbi Meir says, "Ein Vayigash elo l'shon shalom." Rabbi Meir says, "Vayigash." Vayigash always means peace. Shenama vayikshu vayish alehem l'shon. They said hello to one another. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, "Ein Vayigash elo l'shon tanchumen." It means to lenachem, to give sympathy,
console.
You have the word vayigash by a sacrifice. I imagine that in this context over here, what it means is that Yehuda is ready to sacrifice his freedom and his life on behalf of Binyamin. Rabbi Yossi Omer, "Ein vayigash elo l'shon nezifer." Rabbi Yossi says vayigash means to I have a good translation for nezifer: censure. A week ago I wouldn't have thought of that word, but censure, nezifa, shenama bayomru gesh hala. That was by when the angels come to stone, to load. So the people who surround the house say gesh hala, sort of move away from here. Get out of our way. We're going to have these people and throw them out of the city. Rabbi Nosson Omer, "Ein vayigash elo loshon mishmush." Mishmush means to touch. When Yaakov comes in to get the blessings from Yitzchak, so he says, "Gishon, I'll come over, vamushkon, I'll touch you." In the context over here, it could mean that what Yehuda is doing is he's probing, he's testing. He's going to try every conceivable way to influence Yosef to change his mind. The only way to do that is by probing. You try one approach and you see the body language or the look on one's face, and then you may have to withdraw or retreat, and then you move in with another way. Sort of to touch and to find what it is that's going to open up the heart of this cruel, dictatorial, tyrannical, unfair Tzav Matareach. Yehuda has to get to his heart. All right, I think that's enough to tell us that the word Vayigash is the real introduction to the whole first part of the Sefer. Yehuda doesn't really know where he's going. He doesn't know precisely what approach he's going to take. He does not have his advisors from the United States who've come in to tell him precisely what approach to take. You know, Binyamin, I'm talking about this Binyamin in the Sefer, is Tov LaYehudim, LiYehuda, or not LiYehuda. He doesn't know. He's on his own. And here he is. He has to make his way into the heart of Yosef. So let's learn another few psukim, and then we're going to see another few midrashim. Vayigash el Yehuda vayomer, Yehuda drew close, and he said, "Be Adoni, please, my master, yedavenu avdecha tova biozni Adoni, let your servant speak something into the ear of my master." Now this can be understood in one of two ways. It can be understood that he wants to speak with him privately, and therefore ba'oznacha means it's only for your ears. It may very well be that he's there present with everybody else, but he says, "I want my words to go into your ears. I want you to hear me out well." Now, the moment he says, "Don't get angry with your servant," that already is an indication to us that he may be saying things that can be understood in a very tough light, and therefore he says, "Please don't get angry. Ki kamocha kaparo, because you are like Paro to me." And that, of course, is also understood. Everything he was understood in one of two ways. Ki kamocha kaparo, on the face of it, seems to me you're as important as the king himself. Rashi says, "Nah, there's another way to approach it. You are as deep. You're as bad as Paro." We'll forget all of the words that are, you know, triple word straw would have given me, who knows what. Just a plain word like bad. You're as bad as Paro. There are going to be three parts to the speech. The first part of the speech is a summation of what took place in the past. Adoni Shalat Avadav Lemor, my master asked his servant, saying, "Hayesh lechem avo och, do you have a father or a brother?" Panomar al Adoni, we were very honest and we were open and forthright, and we said to my master, "Yesh lo avsa king, we have an old father, v'yelet zekunim katan, and there's a little yingala, then zekunimul, v'achiv meit, and his brother died, by Yivater Hu Levado Lidimova Aviv Ahevo, and he alone remained to his mother and to his father who loved him. Vatomer Lavadecha, and you said to your servants, Hodi Duhu Eli, Vasima Ini Allah, bring him down to me so that I can see him, I can place my eyes upon him." Here is one of the places where the Medrash and Rashi say that, even the first pasuk, when he says, "My master asked his servants, do you have a father or brother?" Listen, do you ask that of all the people coming into Mitzrayim to buy grain? Do people have to give you all of the information about their families? And therefore the Medrash says, Mitchila, he's telling you from the very beginning you came against us because you wanted to find something against us. The same pasuk can be understood that he's merely reviewing everything that happened in the past. You asked us, and we, in all honesty, forthright, open, we responded truthfully. Right? That's one way of looking at it. Or as we say, the other way is, what kind of questions are you asking? Why are you invading our privacy? We came like everybody else to buy grain. Our money is as good as anybody else's. But you seem to want more. You singled us out for special treatment and not preferential. Same pasuk can be understood in one of two ways.
And the same thing, this pasuk Chaf Aleph 21, you said to your servants, bring him down to me, Vosima Eini Alava, I'll look at him.
Medrash says, is this what you call looking at him? You wanted us to bring him down here so that you should look at him. Now, this is what you call looking at him? You're not going to take him away forever as a slave? But then back to Yehuda, and he said to my master, the boy cannot leave his father, he will leave his father, and he will die. Yehuda has learned over here the art of how to use words. There is one word that is going to appear 14 times in his speech, the word father. The word father. You keep repeating the same word and you start getting the picture, you hammer away at somebody. Forgive me for a political comment. If I hear Ehud Barak speak once more about the Kitzonim, I at least heard him 10 times in 1 hour there. His advisors most probably have told him, you have to fight somebody. So create this picture, there are Kitzonim out there who are going, the extremists are going to take over the country, and Barak is going to come riding in on a white Merkava, and he's going to save us from the Kitzonim. You understand? And the word kept coming in. And how many times did he say, Chinuch? 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 I don't know, Labor was in power for about 40 years. What did they do about Chinuch? I'm sorry, I can't help it. It's all coming out over here. It's that good old Vysotsky tea all over again. Bring me back to sanity. Yehuda is doing the same thing. He's going to be using the word father 14 times. He will use the word slave 13 times. And in a sense, each time that he uses the word father, what he's really doing is he's attempting to weaken and to soften it. There's a tata, there's an alter tata there who can't live without the child. What he intends by using the word slave, in a sense, in most cases, the word slave over here is being used to describe he and his father, that we are subservient before you, we are your slaves. So that softened, one is his ego, referring to themselves as slaves. The slave to, as in this pasuk, you said to your servant, that's me, us. In other words, so number one, they're subservient, and so that already is going to... is going to be speaking, addressing his ego. Father is going to be speaking to his emotion. Everybody, most people, all the people have fond thoughts and feelings about their fathers, or certainly once they become fathers, they have feelings about fatherhood. This is apple pie. Motherhood and apple pie. He said to my master, Lo yuchal anal azvet aviv azavet aviv vameit. The word vameit, fascinating, he sort of saved it for the end of the pasuk. There's something, there's a drama over here. And we said to my master, the boy cannot leave his father. And then he repeats, vazavet aviv, and he will leave his father. Sort of, this is the kind of sentence that you can imagine him drawing it out. Like, what's going to happen if he leaves his father? Vameit. And even the vameit, doesn't really tell us who's going to die. It could be the boy is going to die. Without a tata, he's going to die. Or the tata without the boy will die.
You said to your servants,
"In lo yeded achicha makotam itchem, if your small brother will not come down low, tosifun lurot panai, don't see me again."
Now, this pasuk, I don't know how you can read this as a conciliatory pasuk. This is not conciliatory. We are going to be denied the right to purchase grain in order to feed the mouths of our women folk and our children if we don't bring down this little brother. And we just told you,
what did I say in the pasuk before? If he leaves the father will die. And you simply refuse to listen, you remain. Absolutely adamant and cruel in the face of, we can't bring the boy. The boy can't leave his father. And you simply refuse. And all you said is, no explanations, no reasons are given. You don't bring your little brother low, Tosifu Lurote Panai. Don't come back here.
I don't know how you can read that pasuk softly. I don't think that Yehuda said it the way I did now. But this is clearly a pasuk in which he is attacking him. It makes no sense. Some conciliatory statement on your side. You should have said something like, "I'm sorry. All right, we won't keep you too long. I just want to see him. I want to check out." No. And came to pass when we went up to your servant, my father, again, ego, Avdecha addresses his ego, Avi addresses his compassion and his mercy, and we told him the words of my master. By the way, the word Adon is another way of saying Eved, my master. Vayomer Avinu, our father said, go back and buy for us more food. We said, we can't go down. If we have our little brother with us, we'll go down. We can't see this man. We can't see the man if our little brother is not with us. Again, the two words, ego and compassion. Your servant, my father, said to us, "I'll tell you that, you know, kishnayim yoldoli ishti, my wife gave birth to two children. And one went out from me, for Omar, and I said, ach, torov, torach, he has been torn apart." By the way, this is most probably the first indication after 22 years that Yosef has of what was the story at home. He had no idea. He had absolutely no idea. What story had the brothers concocted? How did they come home? Now all of a sudden he doesn't even have to read between the lines. He hears Yehuda saying that father said one of them was torn apart by a wild animal. Velodi Yitivat Hena, and I haven't seen him till now. Now the interesting thing about Velodi Yitivat Hena, they're quoting the father as having said this, the father still has hope. The father still has hope. So one of the Mufreshim who says that maybe he was not ripped to death by the wild animal, but he was badly mutilated and he's still alive, and maybe he doesn't want to come home, I don't know, without a leg, without an arm. Who knows what this wild animal may have done to his face. And so all of a sudden, even Yosef, if he's listening very carefully to every word, he also, father has not given up, hope. Well, the Kachdim Gamet said, and Yehuda goes on to say, you will take this one, the Impanai before me, the Korahu Asam, a tragedy will befall them, the horadity at Sevati Bera Ashol, and you'll take my old age down into an evil into the grave. And now, Kivori Alavdecha Avinu, I come. Again, we have this Semed Milim, this pair of words, the Zug, Avdecha, and Aviv HaNar, and then Utanu, and the boy is not with us. And then here of all things comes sort of a dangling participle at the end of the pasuk, a parenthetic statement that is made. V'nafshok shura v'nafshok. Their souls are bound up with one another. V'nafshok shura v'nafshok. V'hoyok yirotok kiyen ana. And he will see that the boy is never made. V'horidu avodecha tsevat adecha avinu v'yadro sh'ola. And your servants will have brought down the old age of your servant in depression and in unhappiness into the grave. At this point, there's most probably a question that's bothering Sofnat Paneah, who's listening to all of this. Because what's happened over here is something that we may have overlooked, but he hasn't overlooked it. There are 10 brothers here. Why is Yehuda speaking? Why not the oldest, Reuven? Who made you the spokesman for everybody over here? And he knows that he has to tell him at some point. And he says, Ki avdecha orav et hanar meim avi. Because your servant has guaranteed the boy from my father, saying, I have personally guaranteed his safety. In love, Yenu Elecha. And I said to my father, quote, if I don't bring him to you, V'chotasi la'avi kol hayonim, I will have sinned to my father all of my days. For all time I will be damned into eternity because I have not brought the boy back. V'yatonar yeshim la'av, V'chotakha panar, let your servant stay in place of the boy, Eved la'adoni, a servant to my master, v'anar yaw inechav, let his brother, let the boy go up with his brothers. Ki eich ele elavi, how can I go up to my father, v'anar enenui ti, the boy isn't with me, pen era bara, lest I see the evil ashim tzaret avi, that is going to find out, I can't do it. Very powerful, powerful speech. We haven't even begun to plumb the depths of the power and significance of this speech. Of course, one of the things that the Mefarshim have dealt with in earlier parashiyot and it peaks at this point is why indeed did Yosef not reveal himself to his brothers the first time they stood before him? The moment that he stood before them and they stood before him and he recognized them that they're his brothers. Why doesn't he say, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, don't you know me? Can't you see? I'm Yosef, I'm your brother Yosef. There are a number of approaches, because we're right now at the moment when he is finally going to reveal himself to his brothers, but he hasn't done it all this time. So first of all, I just want to deal with this briefly, on the second side of the sheet. Turn over the other side. There's a Ramban. And the Ramban's approach is the following. We don't have to learn the whole Ramban, just a little bit. Yomar HaKatov, the Pasuk tells us, and this is a Ramban earlier in the story, and this is the Ramban writes it at the first moment that the brothers stand before him. Says the pasuk says, "Ki b'ra'ot Yosef et echav mishtachavim lo," and Yosef saw his brothers bowing down to him. Zachar kol ha'chalamot asher chalam lehem. He remembered all the dreams that he had dreamt about them, and all the bundles of grain that are bowing down, the sun, the stars bowing down before him. V'yoda shalom itkayim echad mehem b'pam hazeh ki yivoda b'pitronam ki kol echav mishtachav lo b'tchila. He says, now, the first time they appear before him, so how many bow down to him? 10, but he knows that all of them have to bow down to him, which means that now he remembers the dream, and all of a sudden it's becoming fulfilled before his very eyes. Ah, but wait a minute, that's not the sum total of the dream. He's going to have to maneuver and manipulate things in such a way that 11 brothers will bow down to him. In other words, he would have wanted at this point to say, fellas, it's me, it's Yosef, I forgive you, I've forgotten, it's all over. why does he keep up this this charade? So Raman says, because what he believes that he has to make certain that the dreams are going to be fulfilled. He's going to have to send them back home, and they're going to have to bring the little brother. Why does he want the little brother? So that the little brother will also come, and that he will also bow down to him. So at least first dream, where 11 bundles bow down to him, will be fulfilled. There is a first, I believe it's the Akedat Yitzchak, who says that it's not his business to make sure that dreams are to be fulfilled. But then again, there are other Mefarshim that say, no. If one knows that such and such is the destiny of Klal Yisrael, then you have to put in effort to make sure that it's fulfilled. If the Rebbeinu says that there's going to be Kibbutz Golios, an ingathering of the exile, and a rebuilding of Eretz Yisrael, so what does it mean? Does it mean, therefore, that, all right, Rebbeinu, you promised, so we'll sit over here and over there in Chutz Lartz, and we're going to wait until you take us and send us a ticket. I'll even take business class. You don't have to take your first class. I'll take business, okay? No! Dreams and prophecies and guarantees and promises by God and His prophets require that man becomes an active participant in making certain of their fulfillment. So the Ramban is right. That yes, he had the dream, and he understood that the dream was a divine message, and now he sees it beginning to be fulfilled before his eyes. He has a responsibility to take action to make certain that it's going to be fulfilled. When it says we are preparing bundles in the field, and the bundles bow down before me, that means all of his brothers, 11. The second dream was that the sun and the moon and the stars are going to bow, and 11 stars are going to bow down to him. That's the second dream. But meanwhile, you have to fulfill first dream. First dream is not fulfilled because only 10 of them have bowed down, and not all of his brothers. The king shall allow Binyamin in Mahem, since he didn't see Binyamin with them. So therefore, he came up with this ploy that he is going to accuse them of being spies. Kadesh of you come Binyamin, so that they should bring Binyamin their brother. He wants to make sure that the first dream is going to be fulfilled. Now, we don't have to learn the rest of Rambam, but basically, this is the approach of the Rambam. That all of Yosef's machinations during this period were because he felt divinely duty-bound to make certain that the dreams that he had would be fulfilled. We had, some years ago, we said another pshat of it, and I find now, over the years, I find different people who have said this, a different approach than the Rambam. Yosef understood that Mechidat Yosef, his sale by his brothers, the frightening and terrible betrayal of their brother, was going to be a stain, a terrible stain on the neshama and the consciousness of this great family. And there is one thing that must happen, one thing that must be done. He has to make it possible for his brothers to do tshuva, to repent, but not simply the repentance of saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Not enough. What they're going to have to do is what the Rambam in the second chapter of Hilchot Tshuva says is Tshuva Mu'ula, the outstanding, the exceptional, the peak of repentance is when a person is faced with the same temptation again. And the Rambam says, a person is
he had sinned with a woman and he continues to love her, and he has the physical strength and they're in the same place, and he has the opportunity, the possibility of sinning again, and he withholds himself from sinning only because of tshuva. That means he's been placed in the same position all over again, and he controls himself because he did tshuva. That's the greatest, that's the highest level of tshuva. So what Yosef really does when they come down to Mitzrayim, what does he do? He takes Shimon from them and he puts him into jail, and he gives them food and he says, go back up to your father and bring your little brother. And he's waiting and he's hoping that somebody is going to say, oh no, you are not going to hold a Jewish child under no circumstances. We'll give our life, but we're not going to let Shimon remain here. And Yosef is appalled. He's crestfallen. They leave Shimon behind. So therefore he knows that what he's going to have to do is set up the same situation all over again. The only thing that he had accomplished the first time around, when he accused them of being spies, so they came out with that great statement, Aval Hashem Amanachem, when they said, but we are guilty, we didn't listen to our brother when he pleaded before us. That's why this terrible tsar has befallen us. That's what they said back there in Parshat Miketz. You know, they think Yosef doesn't understand what they're saying. And what they're saying is, Hashamnu Bagadnu, we are sinners. Which means after 20 years, a tsar befalls them. The only thing that they can attribute it to is the fact that they had acted in such a terrible way to their brother. So Yosef sees that there is has been a dramatic change, and that this is something that's been on their minds for 20 years. He knows that they regret and they have remorse and they're sorry and they're troubled and they feel guilt. Aval Asheinim Anachnu, we are guilty. Guilt is the beginning of all great things. Can't not guilt. Without guilt, I'm not talking about obsessive guilt, I'm talking about good guilt. You know? There is such a thing as good guilt, the kind of guilt that, you know, spurs you on to doing great things. You can't go through life guiltless. And here Yosef hears his brothers. Can you imagine 20 years have passed since the event, and this is the first time that they find themselves in such a terrible, terrible state? And the thing that comes out is, oy vey, look what's happening to us because of our brother. But they fail the first test. They permit Shimon to remain incarcerated. Rashi brings it, Chazal say that after they left, he took Shimon out of jail, and Shimon, I think, had an all-expense-paid vacation in Mitzrayim until they returned. But the tragedy is that he has to set up the same circumstances all over again, hoping and praying that they won't fail a second time. Hoping that they won't fail a third time. They had sold him, Yosef. They left Shimon and Mitzrayim. So therefore he sets up the situation that Binyamin is accused, falsely of course, of having stolen the cup. And now Yosef, at the beginning of this sedra, Yosef is waiting. And you know what he's waiting for? He's waiting for Yehuda's speech. I'll tell you, the truth is, if as Yosef hears this, so, you know what he should really be doing? He's most probably smiling. He's most probably chuckling to himself at one point. And he's saying to himself, Hodu Hashem ki tov Rabbeinu shel Olam, I set up the same situation that a Jewish child is being taken from before his family, and they're standing up for him. They're not going to let it happen. Hey, the Beit Yishalaylam, thank God, my brothers have finally learned. They're doing tshuva, a complete tshuva. They're not going to permit the same thing to happen again. And certainly at the moment, when Yehuda at the end of the speech says, let your servant stay in place of the boy, and let the boy go up with his brother. How can I go up to my father? How can I go up to my father? And the boy is not with me. Is there also a possibility that Yosef is thinking to himself, oh, you chevre, if only you would have thought and felt this way 22 years ago, you would have spared so many people so much agony. If when we were out there in the field in Dotan over there, Yehuda, and they put me into the bar, and you would have said, Eich ele el avi, how can I go back to my father? Mahanare nenu iti, and I don't have the boy with me. Oh, do you know what? What agony and pain and suffering you could have spared a whole family. So we're now at the peak moment. We're at the moment where he's ready to reveal himself. I'm not ready to go into that. His brothers, before he reveals himself to his brothers, Yosef orders everyone out from before his presence. Everyone out from before his presence. He's going to reveal himself only to his brothers, because he doesn't want that they should suffer the shame of Egyptians standing around there and finding out these Shena Chevra, you understand, brothers, Jews, sold their brother into slavery. Despite the fact that the moment is so powerful and so charged, he has to make a superhuman effort to control himself from bursting out in tears and telling them, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. But he controls himself because we don't have to wash our dirty linen in public. We don't have to be mevaza another segment of Klal Yisrael in the eyes of the whole world. There are things we should be able to discuss between ourselves, but make us the laughing stock of our whole world, chas v'sholom, and this is something that has been forgotten. We run around the whole world saying all sorts of terrible things about one another, and there are very, very few people with dignity. I was in South Africa before Yontif, so one of the mentioned it. One of the fellas told me that when Menachem Begin had once been in South Africa, they asked him, when he was in the opposition, they asked him about his prime minister. So he says, my prime minister? What are you talking about? My prime minister? Great man. So they asked him, but wait a minute, in the Knesset there you attack him in the worst language possible. So he says, in the Knesset, that's by us at home. At home, there can be squabbles and fights within the family, and we'll work things out. But when I come out to Chutz Lartz and I'm in South Africa, he's my prime minister. That sense has been lost. That sense has been lost. We have very few of our, I was going to use the word leadership, I take it back, very few of our politicians have learned this sense of dignity. All right, that having been said, I mean, there's so much stuff to say. Let's go back to side one. Side one. On the left-hand side of the page, Vayigash Elov Yehuda. You know, the easy print to read, that's the side that I, left-hand side of the page, Vayigash Elov Yehuda. Kaptuv, Pasuk in Tehillim. I think it's the Mizmor that we say Yom Sheni B'Shavua, on Mondays. Kinei HaMalachim Noadu Ovru Yachdov. The kings have gathered together. Ovru Yachdov, together they have passed through. The Perek in Tehillim is talking about the nations of the world gathering to wage war against Yerushalayim.
And God is going to crush them right here at the gates of Yerushalayim. I won't remember it now. Yom Sheni. Mesos Kol Haaretz, you know, Sifru Migdoleha.
Yom Sheni Mishabel Shabu Hoyo Alavir Mamir Beisam Mikdash. Shil Mizmor Livnei Korach Godol Hashem. Umhuloma od biir elokenu har kodsho yefei nov misos kol haaretz har tzion something or other, and then it says kinei hamalachim avru yagdav. So the pasuk is talking about kings who are gathering together in order to wage war against Yerushalayim, and they pass through the city, and ultimately they're going to be crushed over here. The medrash takes the pasuk in a completely different way, and the medrash says the following. The kings have joined together their meeting, Ze Yehuda v'Yosef, that refers to Yehuda and Yosef. Avru Yahdav, so instead of the word Avru meaning to pass through, the Medrash learns it from the word Evra, anger. Ze Nitmalei Evra al Ze, this one became angry with this one, Vizenit Malay Evralzeh. There's a clash of titans, two great kings are locked in struggle. That's how the Medrash saw the beginning of Parsha Vayigash. Ro'odo achazotam sham, the pasuk in Tehillim goes on to say that trembling took hold of them there. So in the pasuk it's talking about the kings, that as they are around Yerushalayim, they are going to be overcome over here with terrible trembling. God is going to cause them to shake. In the Midrashic interpretation, it is, who are the ones that were overwhelmed with trembling? Elo Ashvatim, these are the tribes. Andrew, they said, Melochim Midainim Eluim Elu, kings are dealing with one another. Anuma Ichbatlan, what does this have to do with us? Yo'a lemelech middayein imelech. This is something for one king to speak with another king. This is not our affair. In other words, in a sense, they leave everything open for the clash between these two. I mean, it's a fascinating clash, by the way. What amazes me about this speech is Yosef didn't interrupt him once. I don't know, that doesn't strike you as being fascinating? I always get upset when somebody is asking, interviewing some political figure, and just when they ask them the most important question of all, and I'm waiting to hear the answer, go to the next one. I mean, there's no sense of dignity or even what's right and what's wrong. You can't get I tell you, I was embarrassed. Prime Minister is getting up in order to make what for all intents and purposes is his final speech of his candidacy. Now everything has been decided in advance. The whole world, what they said, that they moved all the equipment out of Baghdad to come to Yerushalayim, all of the video cameras and the whole world, you know, the whole world came to Yerushalayim yesterday. What would have been wrong if there would have been silence and permit the Prime Minister to say what he has to say, permit Barak to say what he has to say? Instead, the whole world has to see that they have to cut the session in the middle. Is there no sense of dignity? Little derechet, they came because they knew they were going to get that. And I tell you, you know what I feel? You know what I feel upset about? We can't do anything about it. They wouldn't even understand what we're talking about. This is what you do in parliamentary. Maybe this speech was different. Let him say what he has to say. You agree, you disagree. In that context, can you understand? Yosef remains absolutely silent.
I mean, I could have interrupted 10 times and... Ah, come on, Yehuda, get over... Stop the drama. Stop the drama. I'm not interested in hearing your crocodile tears. We're playing games. I'm Yosef. I lived through your shenanigans already. Why weren't you worried about my father then? Why weren't you concerned about the old man? Oh, come on. Oh, you know what I could have said? You know how many times I could have interrupted? But there's a dignity. There's a dignity. There's a sense that this is terribly important. Lo zayid aris chen avod. Tell me the more. Just learned is, and the Aleph and Bet are the questions over there, the questions on the Medrash, and I took this from a sefer that I look into from time to time, Parsha Velikha, and I took it out only because it makes an extremely important point. Why do the brothers see Yosef and Yehuda as kings? Why does the Medrash say that they're watching two titans, a clash of two great powers? Yehuda certainly wasn't a king. Even Yosef was not a king. He did have great power, but he wasn't a king. I mean, what does the Medrash have in mind when the Medrash sees this confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef as a confrontation of kings? Second, this is from the Sifrei Musa. What happened to the brothers that they're impressed? Let's assume that these are kings. What are they impressed? We're impressed with kings. What are we impressed with? We're impressed with kings. We're impressed with presidents that were presidents last week and aren't presidents this week, or prime ministers last week and not this week. What are we impressed? What was it that the brothers were impressed with? What did they see over here? This Yehuda and this Yosef. I'm going to read the... I just like the way it's written. Third paragraph there. Ochen Chazal. Chazal, who placed the crown of Malchus upon Yehuda and Yosef, shichreru musag na'ale zeh meisigei ha'taut shedavku bo. Do you know what they did? Chazal, by calling Yehuda and Yosef, you know what they did? They took this concept king and they freed it from all of the terrible, terrible mistakes you can make. Man sees with his eyes, who mitpael may be to shalit. Man is impressed by the outer trappings of might. In olden days, it would have been. He's going to describe it. Olden days, you know, riders before him, trumpets, royal raiments, kingly robes, the pomp and the circumstance of Malchus. This is what impressed. It's all superficial. It is completely there only to impress. And then he brings it down to our present day. Today, as they cut off the traffic over here every time the prime minister or some other dignitary goes through with 3-4 cars in front and motorcycles in front and motorcycles in back, long stretch black limousines, you know, like mafia dons, and there's all the pomp and the circumstances. I mean, I see it every morning. I don't have a driver in a white Volvo coming to pick me up at 8:02 every morning, but as I'm eating breakfast, I see the white Volvo with all those things sticking up in the out of the car. He must be able to be in touch with the whole world. Most probably he's calling the grocery or Shuk Nof to get paid off for his wife. All right, he better not hear this. I mean, she's a nice lady. We have very good neighborly relations with our Minister of the Interior, the Sarah Pnim, who's two flights up. The only thing I don't like is he has a few pet snakes in the house, but all right. No. And his dog was woke me up last week. But all right, this tape, of course, is going to be censored, or I'll be censured and imprisoned. The dog does make a lot of noise. Okay. There are the outer trappings, and this is what impresses us. Do you know what the tribes are impressed? The Shvatim, the brothers, you know what they're impressed? They are impressed by the inner strength and the dignity of the two people that they see before them. They may not know it yet, but in a few moments they're going to know what a Yosef is. Yosef is one of the unbelievable stories of all of Tanakh. A 17-year-old boy, alone, handsome, cut off from family and anybody who speaks his language in one way or another, no one with whom he can relate, 17 years old. And he ends up, of all places, as a slave in the house of the chief executioner of Mitzrayim. We're talking about a 17-year-old boy thrown into one of the most, the worst situations possible. How does he maintain his strength, his dignity, his morality, his piety, and he is open to all sorts of temptations of the most difficult sort? It's unbelievable. This Yosef goes from one period into another. He's a slave in the house of the executioner. The daily attempt at seduction by Eshet Potiphar, and because of what's really, he's falsely accused. He ends up 12 years, you know, he's in 12 years in the pit, 12 years in the bar. And when we're talking about a jail, we're not talking about a jail, with the comforts of modern day jails. We're talking about a man 12 years in the muck and the mire of and he maintains himself. He has tremendous dignity. And there, the butler and the baker are all falling apart after a day or two in prison. And he is the one who remains absolutely strong. It's amazing. The story of Yosef is absolutely amazing. And here, when finally all of Mitzrayim is unable to interpret the dream of Paro. You understand? Nobody can interpret it. And finally they pull him out of the bar. As it says, they lifted him out. You know, he was 12 years. Mamish in Drerd. That's where he was for 12 years. And they pull him out, they wash him up, they clean him, they give him a haircut. And I can imagine, there's no doubt about it. The entire leadership of Mitzrayim is standing in that throne room as they bring this 30-year-old before the king, an unknown. And he resists a tremendous temptation. Here it is. He can once and for all put the terrible past behind him. When Paro tells him, Shamati, I heard about you, that you know how to interpret dreams. Now, do you know what this Yosef does? I mean, okay. So had Paro gesagt. So he should have said, okay, Paro, let's just hear the dream. Oh. No. Yosef has heard something. Here is the slave who's been in jail, and he, before the entire leadership of Mitzrayim, he takes exception to what Paro has said. Shash, still, don't open up your mouth, Yosef. What are you getting? You're going to get yourself into trouble. Bill or die, it has nothing to do with me. Elokim Yaneh Shlom Paro. God is going to tell Paro what it is that he has to know. You know how many times this man has used Elokim? He's talking to people that don't understand. They can't plumb the depths of his mind. He is in a society, in a civilization, in a milieu, in an atmosphere, in an environment that is completely and totally hostile to everything that he stands for. And he's not ashamed of standing up there and saying, you should know, fellas, you may have a pantheon of all sorts of deities and God, I believe in Elohim, and Elohim is the one who's going to do it. I don't know. He was taking the chance of Paro saying, listen, don't practice no religion over here. We don't want any kitzoniim. Send him back to the pit. Yosef, when he is the attempted seduction by Eshet Potiphar, he says, what are you talking about? V'chotasi le'elokim, I can't do this. I will have sinned before God. He doesn't say, listen, I will have sinned before your husband and I may be impeached for it. No! I will have sinned before God. How does he maintain himself? It takes a tremendous inner strength. The fact is, the freest person standing in the presence of Paro and the entire leadership of Mitzrayim is Yosef. He has no hang-ups. He is bound to nobody. Nothing is going to move him. He's the person with the greatest degree of freedom. They are all the slaves of a pagan and heathen culture. They don't know the extent to which they're enslaved. And this slave who is standing before them has the freedom to say whatever is on his mind. Nothing is going to stop him. That's when you take a look at Yosef, at the inner Yosef. What is kingdom? What's Malchus? Malchus doesn't mean the outer trappings of pomp and circumstance. Malchus means strength and inner strength. And the Shvatim, as they watch Yosef and Yehuda, what they see before themselves is awesome strength, might, power. Not the kind of power that can be incarcerated or jailed or removed because it is independent of any kind of influence from without. Where does the strength come from? Chazal say it, and then Rashi brought it. Vamish one Rashi that amazing. Rashi says, as the wife of Potiphar that day we're talking about the moment of greatest seduction. He saw Dmut Dyukno Shel Apa. He saw in his mind's eye the Tata. He saw Yaakov Avinu. You know what Rashi is saying? If you have a past to look forward to, you stand a chance of having a future. If you have something that is the role model that you believe in and that you stand for, you can, or at least you have the tools to withstand a tremendous amount of temptation. But if there's nothing to look for, if leadership is bereft of any kind of inner meaning and inner content, and it's all an attempt at achieving power, and nobody really cares about the man in the street. I'm speaking right now. I'm speaking how I feel today. What's today's date? December, whatever it is. The 22nd. December 22nd. It's the day after Hanukkah. I don't believe that any of these people care about us. They can talk about education and social welfare and the 200 or 300,000 children that are living below the poverty line. They all want power. When they come to take me away, just remember, I will remain independent even in prison. All the knights in shining armor, everybody's gonna help us. Let's read a little further. Ha'adam yid elay nayin, man sees with his eyes, who mit pa'el may be tuye ha'atzma ha'chitzonit shal ha'shalit. He's influenced by the outer trappings of might. Bimei kedem, in early days, back way back then, nimshach ha'lev hit pa'el. I'm sorry for this word over here. I didn't put that word in there. In ancient days, it was the barak, the shine, the brilliance of ginunei ha'malchot. You understand? Min ha keter hashachok. No, I don't say it's the the crown that shines with brilliance, min malgushei ha'peir, from the garments, min ha'armon ha'sagi, the great palace, v'shifat ha'susim shelivu at merkevet ha'melech v'chadomeh, and all the horses, all of the many horses that are riding with the king. B'yomenu, today, mistanver ha'adam, a person is blinded, me'hofa'ato ha'botechat shel ha'moshel ba'televizya. When he stands up, what impresses him is the way he stands up with a sense of self-confidence on TV. Min ha'limuzina ha'shchoha, the black limousine, or ha'volvo im ha'vilonot, the Volvo with its curtains. Ulam chazal migalim lanu shebechol elu lo mitzuyah ha'malchut. Chazal is telling us that none of these fall under the category of Malchus. Ha'melech eino melech mitzad atzmo el mitzad avadav ha'ovdim oto, al melech kezeh umrim ein melech b'liya. What makes the king is something outside of himself. The people. Or what the latest poll says. That's what makes the king. By the way, Shachak is down about 3-4 points. He's below Barak. And there it is. It's Barak number one. And it's Netanyahu number two. And Shachak is coming in number three. The great horse race. Limor, Livnat. You know, the whole bunch of them over there. It all, you know what the poll means? The poll means that the might or the strength of the leader is something that is completely outside of himself. It's not internal. But where there is that internal strength and dignity and morality, this is something that belongs to the leader, and that's what Chazal called Malchus. That's being a Melech. There's a beautiful Gemara, a Mishnah at the end of Masechet Horia that says the definition of Melech is the definition of King, Mi She'ein Al Gapov Ela Hashem Elokov, the one who has none above him except God is God. Not influenced by men, not influenced by society, not influenced by polls. His loyalty goes only to God. Et Elokim Ani Yoreh, throughout, at every moment, this Yosef doesn't let Paro forget for a moment that I am God fearing. God fearing. You got that, Paro? Everything that you stand for and all that you believe in is meaningless to me. That's strength. That takes might. That means not being galuti. That means an ability to stand up with tremendous dignity. Ki im timrod bo medinato batla malchuto ve'ineno. I mean, when I read it just felt so contemporary. Because the king depends on his people. What happens if his people rebel against him or do the things that have been done in the last week to two great leaders? By the way, there's a third one who also has to get it. He didn't get it yet. Huh? Who? No. Arafat Yemach Shemai. The three Machsom Erez people, the three big leaders of last week, two of them went down already. The third. Just remember, I said it on December 22nd, just remember that. Batla Melech Kazehu Be'emet Eved La'Avadav Avadav Nodim Lo Et Malchuto. Now, that kind of king is a king who receives his, there's a word for it, mandat. He receives his mandate from the people. The Malchus that Chazal are talking about when they describe Yehuda and Yosef, and the Shvatim who see Yehuda and Yosef as Malchus. Watch, just one more, we'll just read this paragraph. It's like it just struck me. This comes from one of the Shiurei Da'at. The Shiurei Da'at are the Shiurim, Musa Shiurim of the Telza Yeshiva. And it's brought by Moshe Grilak in a sefer called Parsha Velikha. But he says, it comes from the Shiurei Da'at, watch. He writes it over a little bit, watch. That kind of a leader needs people. Without people, he's not a leader. Lamrot ha-pe'er, despite all of the pomp and chazut ha-shiltonit ha-chitzonit, the outer look of lordship. Malkeinu zeh, these few sentences, I read them yesterday, I feel. This kind of human king, achuz p'chadim, he's overwhelmed with all sorts of fears. Pachadei intrigot, he's afraid of all sorts of intrigues against him. I don't know, why was Shachak speaking to Barak? What was Lemuel Livnat doing with Benny Begin? I didn't mean it that way. I'll have to erase that. In other words, every meeting that takes place, what was Meridor doing with Milo? Right? No, there are intrigues. It's not only that. I'm sure if I'd be in the United States, I'd be able to mention Newt and Livingston, and I don't know the rest of the. I don't know them. Thank God, I have enough. I have enough to help cop over here. Dafet lachvisen what's going on in America. Pachadei intrigot ve'eman no ra'ah. Terrible fear mitrachei chatzer bilti poskim. There's always there are all sorts of intrigues going on around him. Unending. If you think you're finished with one, you have another one. David Levy is knocking at the door, you understand? He's a constant pain. Hama'aymim al shiltono, those who threaten his rule. Tulutoba anashim uberitzonam hatov muchledet. His dependence upon people is absolute. That's the way it works over here. By the way, that's the way democracy has to work. That's the way democracy has to work, but that would never be described as malchus. Some of democracy has to work that the leader is dependent, yes, on people and all sorts of people. He has to be open to the needs of the people. There are times that he has to be able to fight the trend as well. Ha-pachad mipnei nitzanei hitnagdut. There is always the fear of those who are going to oppose him. Dochef oto lipsha'im neged nitmardim b'poel. And sometimes it's going to push him to do the wrong thing against people who oppose him. So in ancient days, it may very well have been the guillotine. You know, there were very clean, neat ways to get rid of opposition. In a democratic society, of course, it's a different thing. You don't invite the minister of such and such to an extremely important meeting, so you have sent him a message. It's an ongoing intrigue. This is not Malchus. Malchus is an inner strength. And when the brothers see Yehuda and Yosef, I think we described a little bit the greatness of Yosef. Yosef is awesome. But a Yehuda who is able to say Sadka Mimeni as he who has paskin that Thomas should be put to death because of an illegal liaison. She is being taken out to be put to death, and only he and she know. There's nobody else in the world that knows. They're the only ones. It would have been very easy for him simply to have nothing. To say, Zodka, she is right, me man, this takes tremendous strength. This takes tremendous and awesome strength. This is a sign of a man of integrity. Man of integrity, yes, can fall, he can err, but then he has to get up and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. The moment that you start playing all sorts of games, you're finished. You're finished. This takes great strength. Yehuda and Yosef are the symbols of Malchus. Malchus is inner independence and inner strength, the ability to stand up against all sorts of influences and seduction and all the rest. And therefore, when the Shvatim see, they see Yehuda and Yosef, they see before themselves greatness. That's Malchus. That's Malchus. And anything else around you can be politics, it can be whatever words you want to call it, but it's not statesmanship. It's not statesmanship. We are living in a world without statesmen. there once were, so they tell us, most probably the ones that we didn't know or the ones that we weren't close enough to get to know. They tell us that there were once statesmen. There are no statesmen. Statesman is sort of a kind of Malchus. Yehuda and Yosef are Malchus. Okay, that's it.